Nibbana Sadharma Samstapako Lokanamita Karino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Bhajana Nandina Mata Liko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Jaga Sri Jiva Gopalaka. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they're honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shishad Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. With more of the rules. Let's see. One I thought we could talk about today, briefly, is performing devotional service in Kartik. Some of you, not a tremendous number, but some of you asked about this. Anyway, it's a nice subject, particularly since Kartik is coming up in about a few weeks. So it appears on page 103 of the Nectar of Devotion. One of the most important of these ceremonial functions is called Urjavrata. Urjavrata is observed in the month of Kartik, October-November, especially in Vrindavan. There is a specific program for temple worship of the Lord in his Damodar form. Damodar refers to Krishna's being bound with rope by his mother, Yashoda. It is said that just as Lord Damodar is very dear to his devotees, so the month known as Damodar or Kartik is also very dear to them. The execution of devotional service during Urjavrata in the month of Kartik is especially recommended to be performed at Mathura. This system is still followed by many devotees. They go to Mathura or Vrindavan and stay there during the month of Kartik specifically to perform devotional services during this period. In the Padma Purana it is said, the Lord may offer liberation or material happiness to a devotee, but after some devotional service has been executed, particularly in Mathura during the month of Kartik, the devotees want only to attain pure devotional service unto the Lord. The purport is that the Lord does not award devotional service to ordinary persons who are not serious about it. But even such unserious persons who execute devotional service according to the regulative principles during the month of Kartik and within the jurisdiction of Mathura in India are very easily awarded the Lord's personal service. So Kartik is coming up. Did everyone mark themselves present? Anyone not? Just pass it, David, and pass it back also once you've marked yourself present. So Kartik's coming up. What's the first day of Kartik? 27th. No, that's something else. So the month of Kartik. What is it? 7th. 7th. October, right. Okay. Yes. So yeah, Kartik semester of VIHE does not coincide exactly with Kartik. So it was the month of Kartik specifically that I was talking about. Okay. So, who knows who's the presiding deity of the month of Kartik? Well, yes. And also? Huh? No. Well, maybe in a certain sense, but not in this sense. Srimati Radharani is. Urja Devi, which is a name of Srimati Radharani. So, because Srimati Radharani is presiding over the month, That's one reason, at least, that there's special mercy to be had. Very special mercy. Prabhupada once, in discussing about Kartik, he said, it's something like the way that there's more mercy available. It's something like if someone owns a shop, take Shivananda, he owns a shop, selling all sorts of nice things for devotees. Then for 1 month he feels, let's have a sale. Let's reduce all the prices dramatically and just let people take all the same goods but for a much less price. So Prabhupada said Kartik is something like that. Krishna has his way of, you know, being merciful. But during Kartik, it's like Krishna is having a sale. He's just saying, come on here, look, you could just take the mercy. So the mercy, same mercy, is much more freely available. So it's very nice. Therefore, people, and we'll see, it'll be very busy during Kartik. If you go down to Radha Damodar particularly, it's like, I don't know, it's like a sort of like a race course around there. People just flying around doing circumambulating. It's really quite something. So these people are trying to get the mercy. We should also try and get the mercy. You know what's a good way to get the mercy during Kartik? Particularly recommended is that you do extra devotional activity. That's particularly recommended. Even you can take some special vow. During the Bhagavad Gita class the other night, we mentioned Dridhavrata. Krishna was saying that the devotees, they take determined vows, like to chant 16 rounds a day, follow the four regulative principles, not break Ekadasi, fast on the appearance or disappearance days, and render devotional service very enthusiastically and steadfastly. So we should have these resolutions, Dridhavratas, within our minds already. But during Kartik, you can take some special vow, like increase your chanting. That's a very popular one. Instead of 16 rounds, do 18 or 20 or something like that. Some devotees take the vow to circumambulate Vrindavan every day. A lot of people do. I remember last Kartik, Mahamantra Prabhu. I don't know where he is. Where is Mahamantra? He disappeared. Oh, he's fixing his computer? Okay, anyway, last year he and Kavi Chandra Maharaj, they took that vow. So every morning during japa, they circumambulated Vrindavan every day. And some devotees, wow, they take the vow to do Govardhan Parikrama every day. Every day. Some people do Govardhan Parikrama twice a day. I don't think they do it all day, all the month, but I know some people do it twice a day. We, on our Govardhan Parikrama the other day, we stopped at that Uddhava Kund around the back there, and the fellow there said that his father circumambulated Govardhan Hill 5,000 times in his life. That's pretty good, isn't it? It's like every day, in effect, every day for 15 years or 13 or 14 years. Phew, that's really quite something. Anyway, the thing is that it is recommended, actually. It's a good thing. If you take some reasonable, should be reasonable, shouldn't be unreasonable, like during Kartik, I'm not going to sleep. I'm not going to eat. Just chanting only. So anyway, it should be reasonable. Some reasonable vow. And then stick at it. Don't just stick at it for 3-4 days. and then decide, well, not so practical, and give it up, but figure out some suitable thing one can do. And anyway, like I said, there's special mercy available. So it's an important thing, particularly here in Vrindavan, it applies more than anywhere else. You can get some special mercy. So there's Yashoda Damodar, and there's also Radha Damodar. I mean, the deities Radha Damodar, they're there in town. So there's also, like, there's the Yashoda Damodar story, pastime. So there's Radha Damodar also, when Radha and Krishna got married, they were playing, play-acting like they got married. And when people get married in India, I don't know how much they still do it, but they get tied up together. So Krishna got tied up to Srimati Radharani, and that's Radha Damodar. They used to, I don't know, do they still do it? They do that here in India? Do they have to stay tied up for a week? Sometimes? I heard they used to stay tied up for a week just to get the idea that, you know, I can't just go and do my thing. Charishandra?
I've seen weddings where they don't really tie them together. They just kind of like, the man's chatter with the lady, sorry,
right.
They have to stay for a week.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see. That's interesting. Very profound. This is actually the idea. Thank you, Shivananda. That's it. Actually, that's the main knot. Anyway, with Radha Damodar, it was very transcendental and very nice. Srimati Radharani's cloth was tied around Krishna's waist. So that is Damodar, Dama Udara, rope around the waist. Okay, now, I think what we'll do now is just have a little sort of overview of some of these points. If I brought them, did I bring them? Yes, I brought them. Okay. Which, when you go through the list, there appear to be duplications. Did you notice that? There appear to be duplications. So we'll go through those which appear to be duplications. We'll see that some are. If they are, that means that they're very important and they're being stressed. Otherwise, there may appear to be duplications, but they may not be exactly. They may just be different aspects of the same or similar activities like that. So let's see. Where are they? Here they are. So for example, how about number 10 from the first list, the 10 do's, top of page 54. Worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree, and number in the last list, number 33, pouring water on tulsi. So worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree would certainly include tulsi. She's definitely a sacred tree, the most sacred tree actually. But here we're told we must also pour water on her, which is a form of worship. So it appears that may be a duplication. But the point is that worshipping sacred trees like banyan tree is referring more to having a respectful attitude in general towards sacred trees like the banyan tree, and for that matter, other sacred things. In fact, if you read Prabhupada's elaboration on it, you'll see that he talks in those terms, respecting the Vaishnavas, respecting sacred things. Whereas number 33 in the third lot is specifically watering Tulsi Devi as such. For example, Prabhupada never, I'm not aware of Prabhupada stopping as he drove along the road somewhere in front of a banyan tree and worshipping it. And he never taught us to worship banyan trees. But we're certainly respectful to banyan trees and other sacred things. Then, number in the last list, number 12, 13, and 14, they all appear related. One must sing, one must perform sankirtan, and one must chant. Sounds similar, right? Possibly duplication to some extent. Well, singing refers to more singing bhajans and songs. Sankirtan refers to going out in public with a lot of devotees and chanting the holy names in public. And 14, one must chant. The actual Sanskrit term is japa. So this refers to chanting japa yourself. And then again, number 43, one should chant the holy name of the Lord. So this is an example of stress. This actually includes all of them. And this is one of the five very important ones. So just chanting the holy name, chanting the glories of the Lord, chanting the name in kirtan or in japa or whatever, is very important. So for stress, it's being placed, like the whole activity of chanting and glorifying the Lord is being placed as one of the five very important devotional activities. Then, how about number 7 of the first lot, residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage like Dwarka or Vrindavan? Number 28 from the third list. Wait a minute. Have we got our numbers wrong here? The one which says going to the temple of Vishnu. What's that? Oh, it's 8. Okay. Yeah. Going to the temple of Vishnu or to a place of pilgrimage. Is it? Okay, I guess that's it. Then number, it should be 35 if my incorrect numbering system is correct. Yeah, 35. One should live in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka. And then, the last one, 44. One should live in the jurisdiction of Mathura. So, now, number 7 is apparently referring more to visiting. Number 7 and number 7 from the first lot and number 8. Well, number 8 from the last lot is just a very brief visit. You just call in for darshan of the deity, something of that sort. Number 7 means just visiting a holy place, 7 of the first lot. Then number 35 and 44 are the same. The meanings are identical for stress because it's very important. Let's see. Then there's number 10 from the last lot, worshipping the deity. And 11, rendering personal service to the deity. So the difference here is that number 10 is referring to the basic program, the basic rules and regulations of deity worship. Number 11 is referring to special functions, special festivals, observing, like making a special effort to worship the deity particularly nicely, beyond just the basic program of worshiping the deity according to the rules and regulations. Then there's number 15. One must offer prayers. And 16. One must recite notable prayers. And there's a distinction made in chapter 9. Where is it? It says in chapter 9. Oh, I see. So if you look at chapter 9, page 80, going over to page 81, 82, 83, 80, yeah, finishing on 83. So the first one, offering prayers, number 15, offering prayers, or it's called here submission. That means that in a very personal way, the devotee is offering prayers for his or her personal advancement from their own heart. And you'll see that top of page 81, there's a description of three types of prayers. Some Prartanatmika, Dainya Vodika, and Lalasa Mayi. So Lalasa Mayi is specifically, Prabhupada explains in the same paragraph, a prayer for a certain type of perfection in Krishna consciousness. In other words, to enter an eternal relationship with Krishna, very elevated form of prayer. Dainya Vodika, actually the example of that, actually it's said to be a prayer requesting bhava. And if you look in the next paragraph, there's an example of that. My Lord, I know that young girls have natural affection for young boys and young boys have natural affection for young girls. I'm praying at your lotus feet that my mind may become attracted unto you in the same spontaneous way. So this is a prayer, humbly submitting oneself. Is it? No, wait a minute. That's an example of number one, with feeling. And the other one, Dainya Vodika, a very humble prayer. This is in the next paragraph. My dear Lord, there's no sinful living entity who's more of a sinner than me, nor is there a greater offender than me. I'm so greatly sinful and offensive that when I come to confess my sinful activities before you, I'm ashamed. So this is on a lower level of devotional service. So these are on three different levels of devotional service. And the devotee is appealing on his own behalf. But reciting notable prayers means reciting prayers which have already been offered previously by some great acharyas or in some scripture like this. Authorized prayers, traditional prayers. Then, let's see, 29 and 32. Any questions on what we've been going over now? Oh, well, the way they're appearing, it appears they're in random order because number two is actually a prayer according to here. What is it? Humbly submitting oneself. A prayer from a devotee on a lower level of devotional service. Whereas the Samprartanatmika, feelingly offering prayers, the devotee is actually appealing for not exactly a perfection, but a very advanced stage, the stage of bhava, being attracted to Krishna very strongly, just like the attraction between the opposite sex. And then the last one, Lalasa Mai, is a prayer on a very elevated level, a prayer for a specific perfection, meaning to enter one of the rasas. So they're in, that is the order of them, actually. Which numbers are those again?
14 and 43.
Oh, I see. 43 includes 14 and 13, particularly. 43, yeah. It's showing that the chanting of the holy names is of supreme importance in devotional service. Both chanting japa and chanting in sankirtan. Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, that in some cases here, there is actually duplication when something is to be stressed a lot. In other cases, you may have different aspects of one subject, like performing sankirtan and chanting japa. They're two different aspects of chanting the holy names. So 43 includes 13 and 14. You follow the idea? Okay. Any other questions so far? All right, let's see. Number 29 and number 32. Wait a minute. Is it surrendering everything? Where's that one? I didn't. Okay, 32, is it? Oh, one should be a surrendered soul. Becoming a surrendered soul. But then there's another one, which according to this is meant to be number 29, but I don't think it is. Or one should offer everything to the Lord. Yeah, surrender everything. Okay. So 29 and 32. There may appear to be a duplication there, because they're both implying surrender. And if we look in chapter 11... surrendering everything and being a surrendered soul. Oh, I see. Okay, so the difference between these two is page 97, surrendering everything to the Lord, and page 99, being a surrendered soul. Surrendering everything to the Lord, the implication, the idea is coming to that level. From being not surrendered, but then you surrender. And being a surrendered soul means that when you are in that condition, how you continue on. I hope you follow the idea. One is about how you become surrendered. The other is that once you are, how things are, how you are, when you are surrendered. Someone asked about devotional service and friendship. In fact, a few of you did. Let me see. Yeah, quite a few of you asked about seeing the Lord as a friend, which appears on page 96. So, there are two types of friendship which are described here. Two basic types. One is, if you look, Prabhupada gives a type of a distinction between the two. The first is to act as the confidential servant of the Lord. The other is to act as the well-wisher of the Lord. So, on... Oh, and then there's a third type, actually, which is referred to right at the end of that section. But so Prabhupada explains, the devotee who has confidence in devotional service to the Lord systematically follows the rules and regulations with the faith that he'll achieve the platform of transcendental life. So this is in the category of being the confidential servant of the Lord. You might think, well, it doesn't sound so much like being a confidential servant. But anyway, this is how Prabhupada is explaining it here, that when you dedicate yourself wholeheartedly to following the process of devotional service according to the rules and regulations, then you become very close to the Lord. The second is to become a well-wisher of the Lord. That's an interesting idea, isn't it? We don't want to make any mistakes with that. So Prabhupada gives the example of someone preaching. If you preach Bhagavad Gita and bring people to Krishna, then in a sense you're acting as Krishna's well-wisher, glorifying him and bringing people to him, sort of improving his position, bringing people to serve him. So in that sense, you are accepted as a well-wisher of the Lord. In that sense, you're in a friendly type of relationship to the Lord, one through being completely positive about the process of devotional service, the other way by, in a sense, furthering the mission of the Lord, fulfilling the Lord's desires to see that Krishna consciousness is spread. Then, right at the end, on page 97, sometimes it is found that a pure devotee lies down in the temple of the Lord in order to serve him as a confidential friend. So that sort of friendship, or that sort of activity, we don't really have much, we're not very familiar with, and we shouldn't practice it either. Prabhupada says, such friendly behavior of a devotee may be accepted as raganuga, or spontaneous. The idea being that he's actually taking it that Krishna's my friend, my buddy. And when I'm with my friend, sometimes I lie down on the floor and we just talk together informally in that mood of friendship. So this is actually part of Raganuga. Anyway, we'll explain how it is in a few days. According to the regulative principles, no one can lie down in the temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a different approach, actually. It's quite a different approach to the way we're practicing devotional service. And the devotee who is doing this is on a very elevated level, actually. Not just, you know, in a whimsical way, saying that, oh, Krishna's my friend. Not in a whimsical way, but on the basis of a certain type of realization and perception of Krishna. So anyway, even though this has got nothing to do with Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but still, it is part of Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti in the category of devotional service in friendship, or Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti of the category of friendship. Any comments or questions about this? Swaroop?
Especially here in India, when we are in the temple, and we see people, behaving in a
nice
way,
unregulated ways.
What would you advise would be our behavior?
Well, if it's our temple here, for example, then nicely we should try and get them to change their behavior to conform with our normal standards. Then again, you should be careful about that, because here in this very temple, I forget where I read about it, but I read about it somewhere. Harisori, you know that story? Someone was eating maha in front of the deity, so he told them not to. They got terribly upset and complained to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada got on Hari Sori's case, really, in a very big way. So we should be very careful. But still, the thing is, we can't have people just coming in and just doing what they like. We should try nicely to keep things to the proper standards. Now, if we're in someone else's temple, and they are just doing whatever they may do, lying in the temple, this or that, whatever, talking very loud and different things they may do, then we should just chant Hare Krishna and be happy and just not get into it. Yeah, Lord Chaitanya advised Jagadananda Pandit when he came to stay with Sanatana Goswami here that don't get mixed up with the local people, because there'll be a clash between your concepts and their concepts. So just stay away. Stay in our circle, meaning stay with Sanatana Goswami. And yeah. And actually we find that sometimes, devotees who they really want to get into the Vrindavan mood, so to speak. So they really go and start mixing up with all different people and the local people and really getting involved to get into that, you know, the spontaneous mood. You know what I mean. But actually we find that generally, anyway, at least they're taking a great danger of their position being undermined, because for their position in devotional service, they're dependent on rules and regulations. Soon as they become lax in the rules and regulations and try to become supposedly spontaneous, then they can become sahajya and, you know, lose their position. I remember one of the great ISKCON or ISKCON related Vraj devotees, famous for leading parikramas and knowing all the stories and all the places and everything and being very kind of spontaneous, suddenly he left his wife and married a Russian girl and was in Russia. Then he left her and married another one, and then he went to England, I think, and married someone else. So despite his so-called, you know, Vraj mood and spontaneity and all that, it didn't really help him in his devotional service. Actually, his Krishna consciousness was very weak, and it came out. The weakness came out sooner or later. So, this whole idea, this spontaneous mood, one has to be very careful about it. Of course, a genuinely spontaneous mood is very nice. Now, we don't want to just be dry. But we definitely, Prabhupada was very, very concerned about us becoming whimsical and that sort of thing. Very, very concerned. Any other comments or questions about having Krishna as your friend? Okay, well.
Yes, I was one question to ask for that point. That's what we discussed last night, that we should have all our service is through first to the master.
Right.
And for me, to have Krishna as a friend, I easily put these two concepts together.
Right. Yeah. Well, the first two concepts of friendship mentioned, they're in the context of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Thing is that the idea of actually having Krishna as your friend, this is part of Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, which is also performed under the direction of the spiritual master. But the whole thing is different. The whole thing is different. It's all part of entering one's eternal relationship with Krishna, actually. And the spiritual master is with you. It's not that you leave him behind and then you go to Krishna, but he goes with you when you enter your relationship with Krishna. He's also there. that, you know, we're talking about devotional service on a much higher level. Everything's much higher. And in terms of the practice of it, it's internal. It's external. It's not external. So the actual practice, even in the context of Raghunuga Bhakti, of someone coming into a temple and actually just lying down on the floor in front of the deity, that wouldn't normally be a part of Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti even, actually. Because Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, generally speaking, is taking place completely internally, not externally. And if you start lying in front of the deity, that's very external. And as far as the cultivation of that internally, then that is done under the direction of the spiritual master. The process of meditation and the understanding of the relationship, that's done under the spiritual master. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to discuss Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, or try to, in a few days. Is that all right? For the time being. Yes? Yes. Yeah, so the thing is that Arjuna, there are definitely two, and even three types of devotional service and friendship. First is reverential friendship, which can also be understood as friendship tinged with servitude, like that. But it's also called reverential friendship. Then there's just like unalloyed friendship, like the cowherd boys in Vrindavan. And then there's also a position in between, meaning sometimes unalloyed friendship, sometimes reverential friendship. So Arjuna is said to be in this last category. He's in between. Sometimes he's an unalloyed friendship, Krishna's just his friend. Sometimes something happens and he has some realization about Krishna's supreme position, and then the feeling of reverence overpowers him. And then he goes into reverential friendship, or friendship tinged with servitude. Yeah. So that's what happens in Bhagavad Gita. Initially, it's unalloyed friendship. Then in chapter 11, it becomes reverential friendship, or friendship tinged with servitude. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that whereas those devotees are on a higher level, like the inhabitants of Vrindavan, when they see something like, you know, Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, and they realize, wow, he must be God. Or Mother Yasoda looks in Krishna's mouth at Brahmanda Ghat. Were you there at Brahmanda Ghat the other day? Oh, you weren't there. Anyway, she looked in Krishna's mouth there and saw the universe, and she realized, wow, Krishna's God. So that's the same realization that Arjuna had when he saw the universal form. But in their case, because they're so highly absorbed in the like unalloyed mood of love, that the realization that Krishna is God doesn't overpower their unalloyed, informal mood of intimate affection. Actually, they think, Mother Yashoda was thinking, gosh, I'm really fortunate to have God as my son. That's really nice. Or, yeah, the cowherd boys seeing Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, they think, wow, our friend Krishna's God. That's great. But they don't think, wow, he's God, and then they just, their minds are just completely blown out. Not at all. Then they go back into their mood of friendship, or whatever it is. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that for Arjuna, when he saw the universal form and he got snapped out of his mood of unalloyed friendship into a mood of reverential friendship, He said the experience for Arjuna was something like a heart attack. It was a very shaking and shocking experience. And it devastated him very powerfully. And he became extremely bewildered. Any other comment or question? Okay. I guess that's okay. Unfortunately, I didn't really have enough time to prepare this morning because I got caught up after class. But anyway, on Tuesday, we're going to discuss the five most important items. And then on Wednesday, I guess, or maybe we'll start on Tuesday discussing spontaneous devotional service, Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. All right. Hope I haven't put you to sleep, have I? Look like I put some of you to sleep a bit. Reclining, different angles. All right, so, well, we'll see you for Bhagavad Gita class, at least. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.